The second case for oral argument this morning is the State of South Dakota Appellant versus Brian Dennis Amick, appellee. For the appellant state, we have Mr. Craig Eichsted, an Assistant Attorney General from Pier. And for the appellee, we have Mr. John Steele, an attorney from Plankinton. Mr. Eichsted, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. This case raises the issue on appeal by the state of whether a deputy sheriff held a pickup driver too long after stopping him for allegedly failing to display a visible license plate or other license on his vehicle. And the defendant driver also raises the issue of the validity of the stop in the first instance by way of a notice of review. This case begins at approximately 3:30 a.m. on September 11th, 2011, when Deputy Sheriff Shane Menser of the Girald County Sheriff's Office noticed a dark-colored Ford pickup, a four-door pickup driving in the street in Wessington Springs, South Dakota. He noted that it had no license plate on the rear end where you usually find a license plate, and he looked because he saw a dealer tag in that slot, so he looked for a possible dealer license because he figured it was probably a newly bought pickup. At that time, he didn't see a dealer license, but he saw a person sitting in the back of the pickup in the box, which he found was fairly unusual. But he couldn't see any license of any sort on the pickup as it was driving down the street. And so at that point, he stopped the pickup. Now, there is a statement in the record that he had earlier that evening seen the pickup, but he specifically testified that he was not stopping it in any way related to his earlier sighting of it. After having stopped the pickup, he did look again to see whether there was a dealer license on it, but was unable to see one. The trial court found that he should have been able to see the dealer license as of the time that he stopped it, either from his car or immediately after getting out of his car. But the deputy sheriff once again testified that he could not see the dealer license at that time. He got out of the car.
Let me stop you there. How do we resolve that? How do we resolve that dispute of fact? The trial court found that he could have observed it. And you're saying that, I mean, the testimony is the officer said he didn't. How do we resolve that? That fact for deciding this case?
You would use the clearly erroneous standard, Your Honor, and it's the state's position that there isn't any evidence on the record, any admissible evidence anyway, that would support the trial court's finding. And if there is no evidence to support it, then it would be clearly erroneous, and that would be the way that the court would resolve that particular finding. But that's the state's contention on that one. The deputy sheriff got out of his car, and still having failed to see, from his standpoint, any dealer license or any sort of license, he began to walk towards the pickup. Now, it takes a lot longer to talk about this, but from the deputy's testimony, he said that it only took him 10 to 15 seconds to walk there. It seemed that long to him. Now, he also had a law enforcement video cam of the stop. That video cam shows it to be something more in the vicinity of 30 to 35 seconds. But in any event, it's a very short time, no more than about half a minute. And so he began to walk from his patrol vehicle toward the pickup, and noted as he was walking that an additional head popped up in the pickup box. So there are two people riding there, and for his own safety and to preclude an additional surprises, he walked a little bit away from the box, but he also lifted up his left arm and examined the pickup box with his flashlight, and he also said that he shone it on the back window of the pickup and still didn't see any dealer license there. But he said that possibly the reason that he didn't, because it's undisputed that it was there, that he states that possibly the reason that he didn't was because the heads of one of the people were in the way, or the way that it was tinted or whatever. But he said that he still didn't see it. And so he continued and walked toward the pickup. After arriving at the pickup, he was concerned that as to whether or not there might be other people in the back of the pickup that he would need to be concerned with for his own safety. So he shone the flashlight in the back window, and this was a four-door pickup. So he shone the light into the rear window of the pickup, and the rear window was down. So he shone the light in there and immediately saw behind the console of the pickup an open bottle of beer and then a can of beer as well. So having seen those, he proceeded to ask the driver, whom he recognized as the defendant, Brian Amick, whether he had been drinking that evening, and the defendant indicated that he had, quote, had a couple. And from that point, the matter proceeded as a typical DUI investigation. There were various field sobriety tests. The defendant was ultimately, after the field sobriety tests, arrested for driving under the influence and gave a blood sample and so on, and that was how the facts proceeded. Now, when
you mentioned the 35 seconds, what was that? What did that cover?
That covered everything from the time that that his red lights were turned on, because that's what starts the video cams. The red lights come on, and the time that he was. At the driver's door. So that would be the entire time from the time that he started until he was at the driver's door, and that would include shining the light into the door of the pickup. And after this time, then eventually the defendant moved to suppress the evidence, all of the evidence that was gathered, because the defendant contended both that the stop was illegal under the Fourth Amendment and also that the defendant should have been released as soon as he was stopped because he stated that the deputy should have seen the dealer license tag in the back window just as soon as he was stopped, or at a minimum after he got out of his car. However, all of the case law that we have found states that, at a minimum, the deputy or any law enforcement officer is entitled to go forward and tell a citizen that he is the reason that he has been stopped. So the trial court's finding in that realm is, the state believes, incorrect as a matter of law. In other words, the deputy did not need to just stop the car and, under the trial court's view of the facts, see the license and then get back in his car and leave without talking to the defendant and leaving the defendant to wonder why he had been stopped, whether he was free to go, what was going on. Rather, at a minimum, the deputy was permitted, and as it says in all of the state's cases and the Hand case, which is one that the defendant primarily relies on, stated that the deputy or any law enforcement officer is permitted at a minimum to go forward and to tell the defendant why he has been stopped. In this case, had the law enforcement officer done that, he would have seen the beer, would have talked to the defendant, and the DUI investigation would have proceeded exactly as it did after the law enforcement officer went forward and talked to the defendant. And for that reason alone, this matter ought to be reversed because the trial court's findings are incorrect as a matter of law. The other point that we wish to raise insofar as reversal arises as a matter of fact, and it was the one that Justice Zinner and I were discussing a moment ago, and that is that the trial court's finding that the law enforcement officer should have seen the license tag at some point while he left his car, or immediately after he left his car, is incorrect as a matter of fact because it's not supported by any evidence. Now, we realize it's clearly erroneous standard here, and the trial court is certainly entitled to believe any evidence that it had that supported such a finding. But in our view, there was no admissible evidence, and the one thing that may support the finding here is the exhibits A through D. They're certain pictures, but they're only a mock-up or a supposed demonstration that the defendant and his father put together some 142 days after the fact, and they are not sufficiently similar, and no one testified that they were sufficiently similar so that they should have been admissible in the first place in order to show what actually went on September 11th.
Mr. Eichstead, was the finding Judge Tucker made as to be that he should have seen the license, was that specific as to prior to the stop or only after the stop as he was walking up to the vehicle?
After the stop, I believe, Your Honor. And it may have been after the stop while he was in his car. Would have been the temporary paper, and I'm referring specifically to finding of fact number 10, and you can find that at page 2 of the appendix to the appellant's brief, and it says the temporary paper plate in the rear window would have been plainly visible and readable from more than 30 feet away if Mensah had shown either his flashlight or the vehicle spotlight upon it. And then finding 11 says that he didn't show the spotlight or the flashlight on it on the lower right area of the rear as he approached. Instead he approached the driver's side of the pickup. Those are the two that we're saying there's no evidence for. But it isn't terribly specific. But the trial court is saying that it would have been only after the stop. And the reason I'm saying that is because the trial court specifically found that the stop was constitutional. And it would not have found that the stop was constitutional if he would have been able to see it before he stopped the car. So, I'm sure that he was saying after the stop.
Well, okay. The other question on that is the license, as I recall, was in the lower right, and the statute says it's in the lower left. Is that a violation of the law, which would change the standard for the stop from?
It may be, Your Honor, and that's a particular technicality that neither side raised below.
Okay.
So we're not depending on that. And I noted that when I was doing the briefing, and since it wasn't raised below, we're not raising that before this court at this time. But it's really only whether you should have seen it or not.
Of course, in Hayen we did raise that. You know, in Hayen the the officer thought that having the temporary tag or the tag lying on the dash was legal, and we said it wasn't legal, and therefore he had articulable suspicion because it should have been pasted to the glass.
And that's correct, Your Honor. I think that differs here because there are certain things in hand that dealt with it being securely fastened, and those things were all really material there because they dealt with whether or not you could see it. And whether or not it was visible and not just whether it was hanging in one corner or the other. And you know, if it was in the right side or the left side, clearly it would be visible in either instance. But that's a very interesting question.
We're not disputing it, but it seems to me that if we were to take judicial notice of the fact that the plate, the temporary license plate, was in the wrong side of the car, that would be probable cause, wouldn't it?
It certainly might be, and we'd invite the court to go ahead and do that if you wish to hand us victory out of the jaws of defeat. We're more than willing to accept it, Your Honor.
Well, I think we might be bound by your.
He might be bound by the concession, and the only reason that I make it is because it was no issue below, and we're not ordinarily allowed to raise things that we haven't taken below. But in any event, I wanted to discuss some of the things about these exhibits A, B, C, and D, and the reason that they ought not to be admissible for any purpose. First of all, they're put together specifically for purposes of this litigation, and there's got to be some kind of motivation for that. But beyond that, there isn't any testimony that there's similarity on any number of issues, and even if there is testimony on the similarity, there is some testimony on similarity of some things, but testimony by someone who has no knowledge that there's any similarity. If you look, for example, on some of these, and I can quote from specific points in the transcript at page 32 of the hearing transcript, and it's found on page 43 of the appendix to the appellant's brief. Questioning by Mr. Steele, he asks, is the logo plate in the same place it was on the night that Brian was stopped? And he's asking Brian's father this, who was nowhere in the vicinity. He had no way of knowing that. But, you know, he says, yes, it was, but he didn't know that. There was no way he could possibly know that. And then on the next page, page 33 of the transcript, 44 of the appendix, he asks, and the pickup is at the same location where he had stopped it. Yes, and you know he. Mr. Dennis Amick just volunteers that. He can't possibly know that.
2 minutes, Mr. Eckstead.
Yeah. And so on. You know, those things are... Excuse me.
2 minutes.
2 minutes, okay. And, you know, those are things that relate to the admissibility, but some other things. There's no testimony that the weather conditions were similar between the two nights. No testimony that the lighting was similar. No testimony on where the sliding window on the back of the pickup was. That might have been completely covering the plate. We don't know that. No testimony on the condition of the window. No testimony on the position of passengers, because we know that there were passengers on September 11th. There weren't any when this mock-up was made. No testimony on the distance of the vehicles beyond the fact that they did make an attempt to view the law enforcement video and try to place the vehicles somewhat the same, but there just really wasn't any testimony. And what we would say is those four exhibits were not admissible because there's no testimony that they're sufficiently similar to what happened on September 11th. Therefore, those are not admissible Therefore, there isn't any evidence in the record that supports the proposition that the officer couldn't see or that he should have been able to see this license on September 11th. Therefore, that proposition is unsupported. Therefore, the trial court's findings to that effect are totally unsupported on the record, and that being the case, they ought to be reversed. They're clearly erroneous, is completely unsupported. So for the reason that they're clearly erroneous and completely unsupported, and for the reason that, as a matter of law, the officer was entitled to go forward and tell the driver that why he had been stopped, and in doing so, he'd have discovered it. We ask for those reasons that this matter be reversed and returned for trial. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Agstead. Mr. Steele, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Agstead, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here appearing on behalf of the defendant, Brian Amick, in response to the state's appeal. I'd like to start out, not necessarily in logical order, but in addressing the issue that Mr. Eichstadt closed with about these exhibits. The trial court, received those exhibits for a very narrow purpose, used them for a very narrow purpose, and I believe that they were that we had foundation adequate for that narrow purpose. All those exhibits showed, the pictures, is that from 30 feet away, in the dark, you could see the temporary tag where it was by shining an ordinary flashlight on it. That's all we were trying to establish for those pictures. I think that's the way the court took it at the trial level, and that was abundantly clear. If those pictures are not deemed by the court to be relevant or admissible, where is the record at that point? Well, frankly, my view would be that the state, at a suppression hearing, has the burden of proving that the stop was constitutional. I believe that's settled law. Well, if we don't have that, then how is the state proving that the officer couldn't see them? Because I believe that's what he actually has to show. I'd like to go in perhaps slightly more logical order. To what I believe the main point is as to issue number two. Mr. Eichstadt regarded my citation of the argument from ignorance as an amusing intellectual exercise, but I think it's of profound importance. We all agree, this court has made it abundantly clear, Mr. Eichstadt and I both cite the same proposition on our briefs, that an investigatory stop is illegal unless it is based on a reasonable, articulable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. That's black letter law. When does a failure to observe compliance with the law raise a reasonable suspicion of noncompliance? And that's where the logical fallacy comes in. That's where the problem is with this particular stop. I think the state has to show, in the face of the fact that the tag was there, that the officer made a reasonable effort to look for it, reasonable under the circumstances that prevailed. It's 3:30 in the morning. It's dark. He knows that the tag is supposed to be there because he's seen the dealer logo plate. What does he do to look for it before he initiates the stop? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He didn't shine a light up to where he thought it should be. Didn't use a spotlight. It was maybe not adequate to the task, but that's not the defendant's responsibility. He did nothing before he initiated the stop to find out if the tag was there. This court, has effectively adopted, at least approved, of that way of analysis in the Mueller case. Which is cited by both of our briefs. Specifically, South Dakota versus Mueller, it's in section 20, excuse me, paragraph 25 of the official citation, where the court recognized the distinction. Mueller, if you don't remember it, is the case. I think it occurred up in the northeast part of the state. There'd been a snowstorm. The officer observes a vehicle driving that has the bottom portion of the plate, bottom portion of a regular license plate, obscured by snow that has accumulated there. Well, he can see the top portion, the part where the regular numbers are. He's wondering if it's a valid plate. I guess he's has other reasons for wondering. Calls it into state radio, and state radio reports to him that the plate has expired. Based on that, he makes the stop. They scrape off the snow, and it's got a valid sticker on it. Well, the court, this court, said that there was a distinction, made the distinction between a suspicion that he might have an expired plate and a suspicion that he was driving with an expired plate. That's essentially the distinction I'm making when I'm talking about the argument from ignorance. All the officer knew in the Amick case, the case before the court, is that he didn't see it. Not that he couldn't see it if he looked where it was supposed to be. All he knew before the stop was that he didn't see it. Okay? To show that he couldn't see it, he would have had to have looked. And that was the state's responsibility. He would have had to have shown a light up where it should have been and said, no, I can't see it, even though I've made reasonable efforts to look for it. And
that's the argument from ignorance, the fallacy of the argument from ignorance.
Now, with the issue that Judge Tucker actually ruled in our favor on, which is that the officer illegally expanded the scope of the search. You know, whether it was 5 seconds or 10 seconds or 35 seconds doesn't make any difference if it's an illegally expanded search. The law does not contemplate how long the detention is, as long as it's reasonable for the purpose for which it's initiated. He expanded the scope of the search. He did not check, contrary to what Mr. Eichstadt says, he did not look for the plate even after he initially got out of the car. There was a little, if you look at the video, there's a little flash of light up towards the area where the plate probably was, on the lower right-hand corner. But there's a person there. He's looking at the person. He did not make any effort to look for the plate before he approached the vehicle. What does he do as he approaches the vehicle? First thing he does is he shines the light into the back seat. He sees the beer. He has expanded the scope of the search of the stop beyond the purpose, according to Judge Tucker, that he could legally have made it for. This court in the Hayen case, and I quote, although there are certainly situations where an officer is permitted to make contact with the driver prior to investigating the purpose of the investigatory stop, in this situation, none were articulated. What the court said there is you've got to have a reason to go beyond the scope of what you stopped him for before you start doing these other things. He never did look for the tag. He saw it when he shined the light in the car, when he was talking to the driver.
How do you respond to the state's statement that even if the officer has mistakenly stopped someone, they're entitled to go up to the window and say, excuse me, sir, I made a mistake, you're free to go? How do you, because there are several cases that say that the officer should do that, even if they've mistakenly stopped a car.
I don't believe that includes shining the light into the back seat, Your Honor. I think when you do that, you're conducting, albeit a relatively unintrusive search, you're conducting a search. And at the point where he has not even looked for the tag yet, I don't believe he can expand the scope of it to be searching the car.
Well, is that expanding the scope where, you know, there are two issues? First, he was walking up to the car. This was in plain view as he shined light in. And second, in this case, which is different from Hand, there was an issue raised as to officer safety that he has a right to look in the back. There was someone sitting in the back, not only in the, was in the deck of the pickup, not just the back seat. So he certainly could look at people there, can't he?
Obviously, the young woman popped her head up or was visible as he approached the car. He can certainly look at the people in the back of the pickup. I think what I would respond to that more fully, Your Honor, and the state criticizes us in our brief for talking at some length about the intent of the officer, and I realize that we're dealing with an objective test for the reasonable grounds to stop. The reason the intent of the officer is relevant in this case is the absence of the license plate was a red herring. Was there concern about officer safety? I don't believe it. The trial court did not find that there was concern for officer safety, I don't believe. If he was concerned about officer safety, why did he approach that close to the pickup truck? He could have just said, oh, there's the tag, go about your business. It was pretext, Your Honor. That's my real response to it. It was pretext.
Well, factually, you raise the issue of, okay, can't expand, but in Hayen, again, factually, after he approached, he then asked for license and registration.
Absolutely.
That was the expansion in that case, was it not?
Yes, sir. And then, of course, the detention to do the warrant check and so forth. But the expansion in this case was, frankly, looking in the back of the pickup, and, yeah, he then asked for, I guess I'm not going to say he asked for license and registration. I don't recall from the record if he did in this case or not. I assume he probably did. The state several times has talked about this, in its brief, has talked about this plate being visible. There's no question it was visible. The state suggests that it wasn't visible. It was visible if you looked for it. It was visible if you shone a light on it. It's simply not reasonable to expect a plate to be visible under all circumstances. The law is perfectly clear that a paper plate for a vehicle that's been newly purchased is entirely appropriate. And it was, again, it's on the back window. I would share Mr. Eichstadt's analysis of the issue about it being the left corner or the right corner under the circumstances. I think I've covered all my points, Your Honor.
Very well.
Thank you very much. Steele.
Mr. Eichstadt, you have 10 minutes for rebuttal, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. We would strongly disagree with the basic premise of Mr. Steele that the officer was not looking for the plate. I think he testified that he was, but there were several other things going on. The video shows him raising his flashlight, and while the light may have indeed hit the head of someone who is in the pickup box, that head of someone in the pickup box was also partially what obscured the plate so that he didn't end up seeing it. I mean, this was the officer's testimony is there, and that is what shows that there's something there that puts the record beyond being silent here. The state does need to show something in order to justify the stop, but we do show something. We've got the officer's testimony that he didn't see the plates. And
we also have the trial court's finding. I mean, the officer testified, and then
sure.
The trial court said that after the officer got out of his pickup, he didn't look any further for the paper
sure.
plate.
Sure.
I mean, and we're bound by that, aren't we? And, I mean, despite what the officer said, the court didn't believe him.
Sure, I can understand that, Your Honor. But when there still needs to be some evidence in the record to support that, and we'd say that the record's lacking in support for that as well. But you're right about that. The trial court's certainly entitled to disbelieve the officer's testimony, but as to whether or not the plate was visible, there isn't anything to support the trial court's finding on that portion of it, we would argue. Now, as to the spotlight, I think the record's pretty clear that could not be used. The officer testified that he had no way of using that at all. The record does show that he lifted his flashlight, attempted to use that. The officer here didn't expand the search, not until after he saw the beer in a position behind the console where the defendant had access to it. The search up until that time was merely the usual stopping the car and then going forward to talk to the driver at the minimum amount that there could possibly be. Otherwise, what you would have had would have been a driver sitting there wondering what was going on, and to the point of wondering whether he could even leave. But once he went forward, he was going to see that beer because he was going to shine his flashlight into the back door of that pickup, if only to do so for his own safety. And that's what he testified to. There were two people in the box of that pickup. There may well be people in the back of that pickup, and he could see that the window was open. And it wouldn't have been safe for him to not look and see who was in the back of that pickup. So therefore, it wasn't a matter of him not looking in the pickup. It was a matter of he had to look in the pickup. He would have seen the beer no matter what in the act of approaching the pickup. And after that, the DUI investigation would have proceeded exactly as it did. The officer would not have been required to see the beer and to allow a potential drunk driver to proceed on down the road. The officer is not required to do that. I did want to address one other thing, and that is the intent of the official and the supposed pretext. That doesn't make any difference. What the court has to do is to evaluate the objective factors that are present on the record. The court has said that dozens of times in these cases. You look at the objective factors that are present on the record. What the officer may have thought doesn't make any difference. In the Akuba case, for example, the court's gone so far as to say the officer may have evil in his mind. He may be stopping people for purposes of racial profiling because he doesn't like people of a particular race. That doesn't make any difference as long as the objective factors for stopping them are present. And that's what the court has to look at in this case and in any of these cases of this sort. And I believe that I've looked at that to the extent that I wanted to in this case, except perhaps to say that on the original the original one that Mr. Steele raises in the first instance of whether or not the stop itself was appropriate, all we need to do in that event is look at the trial court's findings, and they, I think, speak for themselves, and the stop was appropriate, and that, I think, can be affirmed as it is. Thank you very much. Hopefully, questions.
Thank you, Mr. Eichs.